overall, you haven't seen a lot of legislative initiatives come out of the Senate this year.
As Congress heads home, Alaska's delegation looks for accomplishments. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a petition to protect king salmon from the pollock fleet.
There's not food in the freezers for our families, yet you see the fleets in the ocean who are taking kings as bycatch.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Ready to quit smoking using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Brigadier General John Mott will lead a team charged with implementing recommendations for restoring confidence in the leadership and structure of the Alaska National Guard. Mott, who serves as the Assistant Adjutant General for the Connecticut National Guard, was recommended to Governor Sean Parnell by the National Guard Bureau. The Bureau's Office of Complex Investigations looked into allegations of sexual assault and fraud in the Alaska National Guard and found that victims do not trust the system because of a lack of confidence in the command. Parnell released the report earlier this month and also called for and received the resignation of Alaska's adjutant general. The U.S. House and Senate are on recess now. When lawmakers return, it'll be after the November election for a lame duck session that will end the 113th Congress. APRN's Liz Ruskin took the opportunity to ask Alaska's delegation in the nation's capital how they think Congress did by the 49th state.
Senator Lisa Murkowski doesn't think Congress did well by Alaskans.
I would give it a failing grade on Alaska issues. When you think about the priorities of Alaskans, and so many of them revolve around energy and energy opportunities, we haven't seen the headway there that we would have liked.
It's been called a do-nothing Congress, one of the least productive in history. Murkowski says the Senate's Democratic leaders haven't focused much on actually passing bills.
Overall, you haven't seen a lot of legislative initiatives come out of the Senate this year. Instead, it's been kind of the messaging votes.
These are bills Murkowski says the leaders knew wouldn't pass, like paycheck fairness, campaign finance reform, and student loan relief. Her highlight reel for Congress is pretty short. She named the $21 million for fisheries disaster relief for the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Cook Inlet fishermen. The first of those checks are supposed to arrive this fall. Of course, Murkowski is a Republican working in a chamber controlled by Democrats. Senator Mark Begich, a Democrat running for re-election, finds more reasons to cheer.
You know, we passed a Corps of Engineers bill, the WERDA bill, which is important for Alaska. More projects now being dealt with, erosion projects, port projects. We did an extension to the highway transportation bill, which was critical for Alaska to continue to receive the money they get.
He also lists the farm bill as a success for Alaska.
We got in there a bill that I was working on with Don Young, and it's the traditional foods bill, now that traditional foods can be served in federal facilities, which is incredible for Alaska Native community.
The measure is aimed at allowing hospitals, clinics, and senior meal programs to serve Native people more of the wild-caught diet they're used to. Begich says the farm bill was also good for Alaska because it renewed the Village Safe Water Program. Senator Murkowski voted against the farm bill this winter, saying the Alaska provisions were good, but at $1 trillion, the legislation was bloated. Begich says he's disappointed Congress didn't pass a bill to include Alaska Native tribes in the Violence Against Women Act. A bill he and Murkowski sponsored would allow Alaska tribes to enforce domestic violence restraining orders even against non-members. Begich tried to fast-track the measure through the Senate, but it stalled. On the plus side, Begich counts a number of wins for Alaska in bureaucratic battles, too.
We had postal rates earlier this year that are going to be doubled, not anymore. We had fee increases that TSA were going to put onto our planes, and we got exemptions for Alaska and Hawaii. So big issues, small issues, but from Alaska perspective, I think we didn't do too bad.
Alaska Congressman Don Young, also running for re-election, gives Congress an Alaska grade of fair to middling.
Probably a C+.
He says the lame duck session won't be totally lame. He predicts Alaska will do well in a number of bills likely to pass yet this year, some of which have already passed the House.
Passed the Coast Guard bill, has a lot of good things in there for Alaska, which I think is, you know, always good because that's a big element in our state.
The Coast Guard bill is still lingering in the Senate, but Begich says he's confident it will move. Congress did pass a temporary spending bill to fund the government until mid-December, but Young says if it can pass the pending appropriations bills, Alaska stands to gain.
We'll, you know, hopefully be able to finalize some of these pieces of legislations for the final output. And we just keep plowing along is what happens.
One bill the Alaska delegation says is unlikely to pass in the lame duck is the renewal of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the nation's primary fisheries law. That will have to wait for the new Congress to be sworn in 2015. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As the pollock season wraps up in the Bering Sea, the Association of Village Council Presidents and the Tanana Chiefs Conference want immediate action to protect declining Western Alaska king salmon stocks from trawl bycatch. Wednesday, they filed a joint petition for emergency regulations with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council to crack down on king bycatch for the remainder of the 2014 season. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
In their petition, they suggest reducing the 2014 overall Chinook salmon bycatch hard cap in the Bering Sea Aleutian Island pollock fishery by 40,000 fish. Natasha Singh is an attorney for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. She says together the tribes along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers making the request total nearly 100, and they want the secretary and the council to make the pollock fishery conserve the way that families along the rivers have.
And we know that they have the technology where they could increase avoidance of the bycatch. And we are pleading that for the sake of the people and the families in the river who depend on the king salmon to eat, to provide, and subsist, they reduce the bycatch.
The petition calls for the bycatch hard cap in the Bering Sea pollock fishery to be slashed from 60,000 to 20,000. That's just for the remainder of the 2014 season. Historically, pollock bycatch spikes have occurred late in the season in the fall. But that all appears to be moot. Federal officials say the pollock fishery has reached 99% of their available quota, and the bee season is expected to close soon, perhaps in a week or so, which would make an emergency closure redundant. They add that the total bycatch is expected to be under 15,000, the lower cap requested by tribes. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which manages offshore fisheries, including bycatch, asked in June for an in-depth analysis of ways to reduce the incidental catch of kings in pollock nets. Myron Nanning is president of AVCP. He says after a summer of sacrifice, tribes are eager to see a commitment to conservation from the trawl fleet.
The state of Alaska already implements opening and closures on the river system whenever they feel that the returns of salmon are low. So we want that same requirement to be carried through with the trawl fleet out in the Bering Sea.
Attorneys for tribes say if the pollock fishery bycatch stays under the 15,000 mark, it demonstrates what tribes claim in their petition, that the pollock fishery can stay under a Chinook bycatch of 15,000 and still catch the allowable limit of pollock. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a school greenhouse inspires a new restaurant in Thorne Bay.
They wanted to have a cafe where they could go and do homework after school, a place to kind of hang out, but also to be able to get a snack and some food.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
A panel of experts wrapped up 2 days of meetings yesterday in Fairbanks that will help the State Department of Environmental Conservation determine the appropriate cleanup level for contamination of North Pole's groundwater caused by chemicals leaking from the refinery now owned by Flint Hills Resources. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
DEC asked scientists with Ohio-based Toxicology Excellence for Risk Assessment, or TERRA, to take a second look at the reference doses used by the state agency in setting a stringent cleanup level for sulfalane, an industrial solvent that leaked from the refinery over several years. The TERRA panelists reviewed scientific literature on reference doses used by DEC to come up with a 14 parts per billion cleanup standard that the agency says Flint Hills must attain before DEC will declare the water safe to drink.
It's a very important step in the process.
That's DEC Environmental Program Manager Bill O'Connell. He says the agency will now use the TERRA panel's work to help it determine whether the 14 parts per billion cleanup standard is warranted.
Once TERRA submits a written report, which will be in about 2 months, the DEC will take their recommendations under advisement, and then we will go forward and calculate a cleanup level based on the reference dose that they have coalesced around.
Flint Hills Resources officials told DEC late last year that they believe the 14 parts per billion standard is overly stringent. They say the level should be set at about 25 times that level, around 363 parts per billion. Flint Hills asked DEC to reconsider the cleanup level. In April, Commissioner Larry Hardegg agreed. Flint Hills officials in February cited the stringent cleanup level as one of the reasons they can't operate the refinery profitably. They closed it in May and now operate a fuel terminal in one part of the facility. Flint Hills and the former refinery operator, along with the state, have all filed lawsuits against each other in efforts to assign blame and liability for the cleanup. O'Connell says DEC will send its final recommendation to Hardegg by the end of the year. Hardegg will issue a ruling thereafter. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
There are no restaurants in the 500-person town of Thorn Bay on Prince of Wales Island, but that looks like it's going to change. The Southeast Island School District, which serves Thorn Bay and several other rural schools, is buying a vacant restaurant from the city. They're going to use food from school greenhouses and a bakery to provide fresh meals for residents and business experience for students. KRBD's Emily Files has the story.
It will be called the Thorn Bay Cafe. Here are some of the entree possibilities.
Carnitas tacos, maybe a taco salad, you know, some Mexican things, a barbecue pork sandwich, a Philly cheesesteak or a chicken cheesesteak, a couple of different kinds of soup every day because we're going into winter.
Susan Powell is a restaurant manager from Oregon. The Southeast Island School District hired her to take charge of the Thorn Bay Cafe project. She's still working on the menu, but she plans to use produce from 4 school greenhouses, and she'll get bread and tortillas from a small bakery run by the Kaufman Cove School.
I think the main goal is to support the schools and to promote their products and to have student involvement.
Megan Fitzpatrick is Thorn Bay's 7th through 12th grade teacher. She said this restaurant is one more fruit to spring from the labor and success of the student-run greenhouse. The school district started operating the hydroponic greenhouse in Thorn Bay in February. Here's how they made it a learning opportunity for the kids.
We decided to split the class and run it like a company. We broke the 20 kids into, I think it was 5 or 6 different departments.
The departments included construction, business, horticulture, and purchasing and ordering. Fitzpatrick says the students were evaluated on their youth employability skills, like work ethic and showing up on time.
Pushing it home that we're running a business here, and it takes the whole group to keep the business running.
They grew mostly lettuce, butter lettuce, red leaf, romaine, and they sold it to the school lunch program and local grocery stores. The greenhouse was so successful that the school district is planning to build 3 more this fall and winter in Naugatuck, Kassan, and Kaufman Cove. So what happened to the Thorn Bay operation after the school year ended?
So there were a few kids that were really into it, and they worked all summer long. They independently kept the greenhouse running.
The idea to revitalize a vacant restaurant and connect it with the greenhouse came from the students and from Superintendent Lauren Birch.
I think the restaurant might have originally come from Mr. Birch, but then the kids sort of morphed it that they can grow the products for it, sell them, and also have a place to sell their products.
The restaurant used to be in Kaufman Cove. Thorne Bay City Administrator Wayne Benner says Thorne Bay bought it and moved it in 2012.
The goal was to try to generate some economic development and get some jobs going in the city of Thorne Bay.
Since then, two operators have leased the restaurant, but both canceled their leases after less than a year. The city put out a request for proposals again, and the school district was the only bidder. The school district doesn't want to lease the restaurant, but buy it for about $15,000. The council has to do one more reading of the plan to sell, and then they'll negotiate an agreement. Fitzpatrick says the students like the idea of the cafe not just because it'll expand their greenhouse business.
They wanted to have a cafe where they could go and do homework after school, a place to kind of hang out, but also to be able to get a snack and some food.
Along with the cafe, the students also want to set up a little shop near the restaurant to sell their goods. Another new development, four schools are getting into the chicken business, so the cafe will have local eggs. Restaurant manager Susan Powell says she's looking around at other local food options, like an oyster farm in Kaufman Cove. The ingredients Powell can't find on island will come from national food distributors. She plans to set up a Facebook page where people can check on the day's menu. Powell thinks if all goes well, Thorne Bay Cafe could be open in mid-November. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Emily Files.
ONC, Bethel's Tribe, recently announced they are closing the senior center at the end of the month and moving to a temporary location. KYUK's Charles Enoch talked with elders about what the change means for them.
As lunchtime nears, elders gather at the Chief Eddie Hoffman Senior Center in downtown Bethel. Seniors mill around the common area, talking, smiling, resting, getting help with paperwork, and playing card games, as they've done since the center opened in the mid-80s. Just before noon, an elder offers a prayer before lunch.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive those who... At least not temptation, but...
As seniors line up for their meal, Elder Luther Oscar says he loves the time he gets to socialize with his friends.
Thanks for the senior center, Ramon.
I started coming to the senior center to enjoy the fellowship, also to enjoy a meal with other elders at the dining hall.
The meal is bittersweet, as it's one of the last the seniors will have together in the building. Bethel's Tribe, Rutsararmit Native Council, manages the Senior Center program. This summer, they announced that they could no longer afford to stay there. The Senior Center serves lunch for elders, delivers food to homebound seniors, and drives a bus to bring them to places like the post office and the grocery store. Elder Lucy Jacobs has been a regular at the Senior Center for many years. She says her worst fear about the Senior Center closing is loneliness.
I'm afraid I'll be lonely again. I don't want the senior center closed. Some of us are always lonely in our homes while our families are gone. When all of us are here together, we are happy. We even get to enjoy games.
The center has been housed in a city building off Fatsak Street through a memorandum of agreement that allowed ONC to use the city building free of charge if they paid the bills. But ONC officials say the cost to run the program totaled over $600,000 last year, and that's just too much. Zach Brink is the executive director of ONC.
The expenses needed to take care of the building are getting too high now that the building is getting so old. We are closing the Eddie Hoffman Senior Center on September 30th, but along the way, we'll look at options for a new site.
It is unclear what the city will do with the old site, other than close it off for the winter. Elder Catherine Peters says it's important for seniors to have a place to socialize, and she hopes they'll find a new home soon.
We can laugh with them, talk with them, cry with them when we have to. And I hope the younger generation think about they're going to get old too and they'll need a place to stay, like how we were, comfortable. Everything takes time, everything takes money, Don't wait too long. Get it started.
Brink was uncertain on what level of services ONCD can provide seniors in the temporary location. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. BP Alaska, as part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Josh Edge. This week on AK, mushrooms. Heidi Dragas is a lawyer by day and a food blogger by night. She features mostly Alaska-grown ingredients in her recipes, and her resume boasts everything from moose chili to Devil's Club salad. But as Dave Waldron reports, there's one thing she's been too afraid to forage, until now.
Now, you may have heard radio stories about mushroom foragers or mushroom experts, but Heidi Dragas is neither of those. Dragas writes the food blog China Girl Cooks, and she's harvested just about everything Alaska has to offer. But mushrooms have always been the last thing on her list.
I think a lot of people are afraid of it, for obvious reasons, because if you don't do it right, you can die.
Dragas has finally decided to give mushroom foraging a try, and she's settled on a ski trail in the South Anchorage area for her location. As this is her first official hunt, she is narrowing her search to a very common, very safe mushroom.
We're just going to try to find a very plentiful mushroom in Alaska called boletes, and they are the easiest to identify as far as I'm concerned.
Boletes are large and brown with a domed cap. The mushroom guides that Dragas has brought along say that under the cap, you should see a coral-like texture. If you see a gilled accordion-like texture underneath, you probably shouldn't eat it.
Oh, look at this one. Let's see what this is. Oh my God, is this not the cutest little mushroom you ever saw? It has gills, so we're not going to eat it, but it's like the perfect mushroom.
Once we venture off the main trail, we find an abundance of mushrooms, but none that we think we can eat.
And it's like a boon for mushrooms, but for edible ones, it's kind of slim pickings.
We do manage to find a single bolete, but it looks like something's been chewing on it. Also, it's rotting. After about 30 minutes with an empty basket, I'm thinking the only mushrooms we'll be eating will be from the grocery store. And then...
there is a pretty little bolete.
That's perfect.
Isn't that perfect? It is.
It's plump and it hasn't been eaten by an animal.
Exactly.
No gills.
We don't have to go to cars and find mushrooms.
Picking mushrooms is totally like fishing. You snag a great one and you're pumped, but then 30 minutes later you're complaining how dead it is. That is until you find the mother load.
Holy
They're everywhere.
Crap.
Okay, let's identify what these are.
These don't look like boletes, but we're hoping they're at least edible.
Yeah, I think that might be the oyster. Oh.
Oh.
False chanterelle.
Oh,
that's
good.
What it is.
That looks perfect.
That looks like a false chanterelle, yeah. Which sounds like it's not
edible.
Edibility unknown.
And flipping through Dragas' mushroom guides, we notice a lot of these mushrooms have some serious ambiguity.
A lot of these say edible with caution. That does not inspire confidence. Edible, but you may feel really bad afterwards.
And that might be yet another reason why a lot of people are too freaked out to pick mushrooms. Still, we decide if we limit ourselves to just boletes, we're going to end this trip with a single mushroom. So we track down one other fairly common, mostly edible mushroom.
So, this one is smooth. This is the gemmed puffball. So I think that's what these are. They look like them, don't they?
Oh yeah.
And they say they're edible for most people.
Edible for most people is going to have to do it because it's starting to get dark outside. But we do have a small bounty we can be proud of. And besides...
it's way more fun than going to the grocery store. I mean, it's in your backyard. It's down the trail. It's, you know, you can see these things growing in the middle of the woods and in the parking lot.
When I ask Dragas if she'll be coming back for more mushrooms, she guarantees it. She says a handful of mushrooms isn't bad for a first-timer, but she's already hungry for more. For AK, I'm Dave Waldron.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Chignik on the Alaska Peninsula.
My name is Adam Anderson. I am the mayor of the city of Chignik. It means windy bay, so big winds. So. It's about 96 is what is recorded. That's the majority of them fish for living. Some hunting, fully riding, stuff like that. We definitely need to grow some. We shrank in the last, I don't know, a decade or two. And hopefully we can get them to grow and keep people working in the same part, in the same process. So, well, it's a very friendly community to be in. There's a lot of, if nobody knows you, they'll make sure they know you. We're kind of in a very mountainous community. There's mountains all around us. It's a fishing community. Everybody knows everybody. I know. Well, we had our harbor that was a few years ago, got built, or finished, completed, I guess. And then we have our city dock is coming in this next year, next spring. And we'll hope to be doing hydro shortly after that. It's a very, very warm community to live with the people, among the people, and it's not as upbeat as living in the city, I suppose. It's a very laid-back time to live in.
Adam Anderson is the mayor of Chignik, Alaska. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Annie Fite and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Josh Edge.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Charles Enoch in Bethel, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Emily Files in Ketchikan. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here.
And by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.